Okay, first of all, I would like to thank to Russ and Glenn for this invitation to participate in this symposium, which is really an honor for me. And my talk this morning is going to be on the role of host plants and overwintering sites, and I'll touch also on landscape change on the populations of some selected species of true bugs, which are really major pests in South America and particularly in Brazil. I have been working with these bugs and their association with soybean and wild plants, and so I'll use this system as an example to demonstrate the importance of monitoring host plants and overwintering habits, and also how the change in the land scenario can impact these insects. So just to refresh your mind, this is a map of South America, and agriculture is started in Brazil in the East Coast. We only have this, the East Coast, of course, that sticks out into the Atlantic Ocean there. And in recent years, it moved west, and particularly into the so-called Mato Grosso Plateau. We have a huge area there, which was, and to some degree still is, covered with the what we call the Cerrado vegetation, which is a kind of a savanna. And to give an idea of the size of that area, all eight Midwest states of the United States fit in the Cerrado area. Of course, there are some areas there that are not going to be all covered with crops, but the area is huge and be very dynamically being implemented into the cultivation process. So soybean is a major commodity in the Cerrado. And I will really start saying that in the beginning of soybean cultivation back in the 60s, it was restricted to the southern portion of the country. And in small fields like we see here, in hilly areas, surrounded by natural vegetation. And so those are typical soybean fields in the past. And one other practice we used to have those days was to plow the soil, as we see here, the red soil showing up, burying the crop residues, which cause a lot of soil erosion. So now what we have today, we have those kinds of soybean fields, huge soybean fields covering large areas. So, and probably most of you have seen this picture before. This is an impressive figure showing soybean harvesters, followed by plant machines. So using the what we have now, the no-tillage cultivation system. So this is a very dynamic system that you have harvesting, and half an hour later you have planting at the same time. So how you can handle the pests in situations like that. So this is what is currently being occurring in Midwest, we call this in central Midwest Brazil. So, and this cultivation system allows a lot of crop residues, as we can see in this figure, which protects the soil and increase the organic matter. So, and also it's easy up the system of cultivation for the growers. But however, it does increase the pest problems. In this case, including also the heteropterans. So, I want to show this in a fast way, this figure, in how the area is turning into the no-tillage cultivation system from the 70s to the year 2006. So up to the 90s, as we can see there, the rate in which the cultivation system changed from conventional to the no-tillage system was small, but then from that time on, it increased in a steady and constant mode. So here we have in by decades, we had like from the 70s to the 80s, reached 250,000 hectares, which would be like 500,000 acres. And from the 80s to the 90s, it reached 1.4 million hectares and continued to increase, reaching over 10 times more in the 2001, and we see there about 20 million hectares. And we expect to reach about 30 million hectares by the end of the year 2000. So a lot of area being incorporated into the production system using the no-tillage cultivation system. So let's start moving to the bugs now. In this figure, I want to show that we have studied the host plant sequences of bugs in the area where I work, in the northern Paraná state. And what we have is the period of soybean cultivation. We have there the bugs living, the alternate hosts, okay, and then they leave the overwintering sites and start colonizing soybean during our spring, October, November, and then toward summer in December. And they reach a peak. They start growing the population, reach a peak as the plant matures. And then they disperse to the alternate host plants and either stay on the alternate host plants or either seek for overwintering places depending on their habits. So different species have the different habits. So what I want to call your attention that in general, we do not pay much attention to the bugs as they leave the main crop and go to the to these alternate host plants. So, and this in my opinion is a mistake. So we need to do those kind of life history studies that they used to call life history studies in the past, where we follow the bugs month after month, what they are doing. So, and as we see these days with the development of GM crops, you know, these genetically engineered crops, such as soybean BT, corn BT, and so on, comes to the spot they need to have areas of refuge that the with wild hosts or conventional plants, and to avoid the development of resistant populations of pests to these BT crops or whatever. So I want to call your attention to that reference, which is there, published by Helmut van Emden back in 1965, almost a half a century ago, and he called the attention to the role of uncultivated land. And he mean by that the role of wild plants and how these wild plants will impact the biology of not only pests, but also beneficial insects. So let's examine some bugs. And here is the well-known, already shown here, the Saunter Green stink bug. We have studied the host plant sequence of this bug in our area in northern Paraná state. And as you see there, it completes three generations on soybean, and it moves to complete a fourth and a fifth generation on Crotalaria, wild radish, wild mustard, and another legume that we have there, pigeon pea. And then it moves to complete a sixth and last generation on a weed plant, which is common there, we call Siberian motherwort, during spring, before they get into soybean again. So there are some plants that they feed on, but they do not reproduce on. And these are also important. So we need to pay attention also to the role of the less preferred plants. They are also important to the system. So like castor bean, they are there on castor bean, but they do not reproduce on castor bean, at least in our conditions down there. Also, they feed on wheat. We have wheat there in during June, July, August. They are during our mild winter, but they feed on wheat, but they do not reproduce on wheat. So here are some of the plants I was talking about: wild radish, mustard, pigeon pea, and the last one on the right bottom corner, Siberian motherwort, Leonurus sibiricus. All right, the red-banded stink bug that was shown here by previous speaker, Pisodorus gildeni. Some do not have the red banded. I mean, this is a male. The males are more yellowish, but the females have really the red on the shoulder, on the base of the scutellum there. So, and this similar to the previous one. It completes three generations on soybean, and moves to Crotalaria, Pigeon Pea, and Indigo. This bug really likes indigo, but it does not reproduce in our mild winter and completes a fifth generation later on during spring before moving into soybean again. So it's a less complicated, less polyphagous than Nezara. And here are some of the indigos, adults on an aggregating there on a wild indigo, and then nymphs on a hairy indigo, and lance leaf Crotalaria also hosts the nymphs there, and you have an adult there on pigeon pea. So the third pentatomy is the most important one we have in Brazil these days, is this Eusquistos aeros, which we call the new tropical brown stink bugs. It also completes three generations on soybean, one generation on pigeon pea, but different than the previous ones, it moves to fallen dead leaves, debris, etc., where it remains on partial hibernation for 6 to 7 months. And it moves out late spring into early soybean, like in September, October, November there. And here we see some of the plants that where they overwinter, like a mango tree, then you have the fallen dead leaves there, and the bugs are there in a state of partial hibernation, and also some also observed under fallen dead leaves of pigeon pea. So here's a little movie just to pick any plant like this cycad, and you look close to the trunk of the plant and you'll find lots of bugs there. You see they aggregate on those plants, and then also you go to fallen leaves of huge plants, you'll see lots of bugs there. So we need to pay attention to these places where the bugs stay during 6 to 7 months of the year. Oops, let's go. Well, second time. So you don't miss it. Okay, let's go. What's going on here?
It's 7 minutes.
7 minutes? Okay. Let's see. You want to see a third time? I don't know. It's kind of stuck here.
Is it on?
Oh, it gets back to the... let's try there. Oh, here we go. All right. Number of published records on this bug. So what I did is, for this presentation, I went to the literature and looked for recent... the number of papers published on it. And as we can see, the number of published papers increased substantially from 1991 on. And this is the time when growers start using the no-tilling cultivation system more intensively. So there is a kind of a coincidence on the number of published papers, which means the bug became more important, and as the growers adopted no-tillage cultivation system. So these two things are related. So, and also, what happened to this bug that became very important, when you move below the Tropic of Capricorn, below the 23 degrees south latitude, what happened to this former unknown pentatomid in this area? So, here we have a relative abundance of the bug on soybean fields in a place called Cruz Alta in the south. And as we see, it was very rare from the 80s, and now in 2007 and 2008 was the most important bug. Another species I want to touch is the so-called green belly stink bug. They call like that the growers, and we are using this name, but not all the bugs have the green belly because the winter types have the brown belly. So we call the green belly anyway. So Dicalops melacanthus, and this is also becoming very abundant. And here we have in this graph data comparing the bugs on the no-tillage compared to the conventional system, and they are more abundant in no-tillage system. This is on wheat. It feeds also on dropped soybean seeds, feeds also on the seed cotyledons, and also they feed on the young on the seedling plants. Here they have the damaged corn plants also a lot, and they are very easily captured if you put just seeds on a petri dish out there in the field, and they feed on all those wild plants, so they are very easy to spot and becoming more and more important. So I went to the literature again, and here we have the same trend. So from 1991 on, we have all those records published increasing and more and more abundant the bugs is becoming, more important, more published coming, more papers coming out. So last one, how many minutes do I have? 3 minutes, okay. New Megalotomus parvus, which is not a pentatome annelidae, also becoming very important, feeding on dropped seeds and also on the cotyledons of plants, soybeans, and we didn't expect it to cause the same damage as pentatomids, but it does damage seeds that we can see in this figure here. And also, this was very almost unknown bug on the 70s and 80s, and it's becoming also important. And last thing I want to mention very briefly is the so-called the global warming. Everybody's talking about that, and Brazil is not an exception. In two areas that I got this data from, the last 110 years, we have an increase in annual mean minimum temperatures indicated, and really we are having a global warming. We are having this phenomenon in Brazil, which is impacting the bugs that stay, in my opinion, impacting the bugs that stay on the ground, such as the brown stink bug. So we have less days with frost, and the time span of frost days is shrinking. So this is really having an impact. So to summarize my talk, the three species that I talk about here, the new tropical brown stink bug, the green belly, the calops, and the new megalotomus, shown are very highly increasing their abundance and economic importance in Brazil. So the increase in area itself, and particularly the increase in area cultivated under the no-tillage cultivation system, are the main factors favoring the biology of the bugs, causing drastic augmentation. And global warming is probably favoring the occurrence of the bugs below the Tropic of Capricorn, particularly the Pentatomid Eusquistus aereus. To close up, I want to say thank to Glenn Tillman and Russ Mizell for an invitation to participate in the symposium. Flavia Silva, a student of mine that helped to prepare some of this material for the talk. Several students who helped getting some of the data. The National Research Council of Brazil for sponsor research projects during several years and for financial support to make this travel. And also the DSA for registration, waiver, and support. Thank you. We don't have that in details, but what happened is that with the no-tillage, you have lots of drop seeds. So you increase having one, food, second, shelter. They stay there. So by staying there, they feed on dropped seeds and wait for the next cropping. So this is what's actually influencing the tremendous increase in the populations of the bugs, particularly the new tropical brown, which stays there. Well, yeah, Ben, I believe, for instance, in the new tropical brown, it feeds on wild legumes, and it was there. It's a new tropical species, was there, and feeding on wild legumes, and as the abundance of food, soybeans out there, so we provided the food, the population grew up that much.
Any other questions? Repeat the question.
Across species, are these bugs feeding while they're overwintering in Brazil?
Okay. Repeat the question. Okay, he's asking if the bugs are feeding while they are there, right, on the ovarian ring. It's not a diapause, it's a partial hibernation. And one thing is a little complicated down there. You don't have steady cold. You have cold and hot and cold and hot. So they, as I show on the that cichlid plant, they are overwintering there, but they get out and do a little feeding. So if you put seeds, they will feed. It's not something that they stay there without feeding. Of course, they do have lipid reserves to pass that unfavorable time of the year. They do have that. Okay, Jay.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. Good. So I think your time is. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.